welcome to Audio Face. We're an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 224. On this fine here established podcast, we got some good stuff today. We have three albums that we will be reviewing. We have "Melt My Eyes, See Your Future" by Denzel Curry, but eyes with a Z. It
has to be very important. Like that.
Very important. You have 777 album by Lato, also known as the Boeing 777X.
We got to be clear. I guess she's calling herself Lato. It's spelled Lato, but I guess it's Lato.
She does say Lato. That's true.
Yeah.
Fine. And then Echoes and Cocoons by Brandon Boyd.
You may know as the Incubus frontman, right?
Yes, frontman of Incubus, yeah. And they're actually on tour right now, which is very interesting to release a solo project. So, yeah, it'd be very interesting to chime in on that. But first off, we got some singles, and we've got Hot Noise singles in Dineha today. So we have the return of the one, the only, Win Butler. We have Lightning 1/2 by Arcade Fire. Actually produced by Nigel Godrich of Radiohead, Tom York, Johnny Greenwood, you know. This is the acclaimed sixth member of Radiohead, as we like to say. So it was very interesting to see that. Their first single since Everything Now era, I think, which was 2017, which is insane to say that, because that's when we first started this podcast, and I remember that very well. But anyways, going into it, also Sans... the other Butler. Will Butler, yeah. So this is interesting, which I didn't realize that they were both in Arcade Fire. But I mean, there's like 48 people in Arcade Fire, so who knows who. Anyways, going to the actual music of it, I think it's actually pretty decent with how it is. Like, Lightning 1 takes a little while to kind of get into the whole track. It takes about a minute and a half to kind of build, and then you get to the meat and potatoes of it, and it's a decent track. And then the Lightning 2, I actually really like a lot. I think it just starts upbeat. It's actually a very good song for it. And, you know, coming off, I mean, Arcade Fire have been making music for 20 years or so. So with this, it's nice to kind of hear a pivot a little bit back to their older-ish sound, but, you know, nothing... where it's just trying to make a throwback. They're trying to just update everything and not be stuck into one thing. And that happens with bands, you know, who have been playing for this long. So I actually enjoyed it, which was surprising. I really wanted to shit on it as much as I could, but I actually thoroughly enjoyed it. And I'm very, very interested to see what their album is going to sound like when it comes out later this year, because especially with Nigel producing it, if he's going to produce the whole record, I'm not sure if he did or not. That's, you know... someone who has so much experience and a vast array of things that they can do to help Arcade Fire, because I think they do need that, because we both thought Everything Now was meh.
Yeah, had some like nice tracks on there, but a lot of it was really forgettable. I had the same thinking to you as well. If I don't know if Nigel is producing the entire record, but we'll definitely be stopping here before we listen to the full record because of the singles rule. But I think... it's hard to tell because Arcade Fire were actually like really solid with their production. Again, like sometimes lackluster, but I think solid when they were hitting with their production. And also, to be fair, Everything Now was co-produced with Daft Punk, I believe. The title track for sure, at least.
Yeah.
So Arcade Fire alone, I think, has a lot of good production talent. I think Nigel Godrich added here only just takes it up a notch. And I'd love to see, even if it's like a full record or even if it's just these two songs, where more of those brains can continue to make really good stuff. I really like the second part for really being upbeat. But the first part is also very nice as well. And I do like how they play and loop in together. I can't help but feel like that was a little bit of a Nigel Godrich inspiration there. But we move on because this is Audio Face. So, of course, we have 517 by Tom York. This is going to be a part of, you know, he's, you know, a film soundtrack era for Tom York and a lot of the Radiohead members, actually, making TV show and film soundtracks of different kinds. This is going to be for new version of Peaky Blinders. There's another song called That's How Horses Are that I believe is going to come out when the British drama is actually released on the 2nd of April. But 517 was released, and it's a classic Tom York, eerie, kind of melodic kind of thing.
Sounds a bit like, sounds a bit like the stuff from Suspiria soundtrack that he did in 2018. And it, if you know Peaky Blinders, if you watched it, it kind of fits the theme of it. Like, you can hear 517, and in my mind I'm like, I can see some slow motion cinematography and stuff in Peaky Blinders with that, and I'm like, yeah, you can, it'll fit that theme and everything. It'll be very interesting to see how it is put into the series. And then yeah, That's How Horses Are as well, shit will be released when the series is out, which is the final series, I think, of Peaky Blinders as well. She'll be interesting to see how that goes. And yeah, it's very good. I mean, it's very typical Tom York, so there isn't much to be said, but I like it, naturally.
Yeah. And then the last track we have here is Look Alive by Dragon Rapid, kind of like a newer group out of Austin. I happened to like listen to this exact song on like a bike as I was like going through Austin, and I pulled over and was like, oh, this is actually kind of sick, I wonder who this is. And so I ended up having a conversation with a guy, and he's like, oh yeah, this is my band, I'll check this out. And I liked, of all the other songs in here, they have like a EP like thing they're about to release of their like released songs, I liked Look Alive the most for its like mix of liveliness and also it's like a really heavy bass line that evokes things that came out in like the late 90s, early 2000s, and like that level of alternative rock. That was something I was really enjoying with it.
Yeah, same. I think that, yeah, the bass was really cool. I like the whole track, and I'm very interested now to look into them more a bit as well, to see what else they have to offer. So, yeah, I thought it was good, too. I like it.
Yeah. Love including a little big ones, some little ones here. That's Audio Face for you. Adblock, really just check out our 2022 AF playlist. We're adding all of our favorite songs, and you can follow along with our favorite songs of 2022 with that. And thank you, Peter, for mastering this episode, making us sound nice. Let's move into the news. And there's a pretty big news story that happened, like just broke over the weekend. So Taylor Hawkins, who was the Foo Fighters drummer, was found dead at 50 in his hotel room in Colombia, and this was while the Foo Fighters were on tour. They had just played a show. They were going to play other shows this weekend, but the band announced, Foo Fighters family is devastated by the tragic and untimely loss of our beloved Taylor Hawkins. His musical spirit and infectious laughter will live on with all of us forever. Our hearts go out to his wife, children, family, and we ask that their privacy be treated with the utmost respect in this unimaginably difficult time. Yeah, it was just hours before the band's headlining set at Festival Estéreo in Colombia. So, like, that is so devastating.
Sucks, yeah. Sounds like he was reporting of chest pains and stuff, and then healthcare workers came out to the to the hotel he's staying at, and it was already too late by then. So, don't know the full exact details of everything, but
initial toxicology reports indicated the presence of multiple drugs in the system. It's unclear whether it was like an overdose kind of situation, but if it were, that's not uncommon to happen in the music world, unfortunately. And you know, different people have kind of like poured out their reactions and support, of course, as these kind of things happen. You have one significant one was members of the band Rush, and famously, Hawkins and Dave Grohl, like, were the ones who inducted Rush into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Like, they got the honor to kind of, like, do that at the awards thing. And we've talked about how the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like, it's another award show. No award shows matter except for the Audio Face Award show. And so it's that. But these are nice sort of, like, honors that musicians give. They matter a lot. And so I'll read part from some statement here from some of the members of Rush. He was such an incredibly positive source of music, energy, and love, and a true artist to his very core. There are simply no words to adequately express how much he'll be missed by all, including Alex, myself, and the entire Rush family. Our hearts go out to his family, the extended Foo Fighters family, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's just super sad. I know, Sean, especially, because, like, we've loved ourselves some Foo Fighters on this podcast especially, so... Yeah, I remember when you saw that news, you were probably just like, what the hell? Like, damn.
Yeah, that sucks. Hearing a lot of, like, different tributes and stuff over radios and everything else the past couple days, basically, you come to the conclusion that he was a really nice guy. Everybody got along with him very well. He had great... he's a musician through and through to his core, an artist through his core and everything, and an incredible, incredible drummer. Like, some of the Foo Fighters songs and stuff were very, very hard to do, and he's able to do it and to write it and to produce and keep doing it at such a high level for a long time is impressive and stuff. And yeah, it sucks. It's really tragic. So it's interesting to see what happens with Foo Fighters, what they do, what Dave Grohl decides to do. I mean, shit. This isn't Dave Grohl's first time this has happened to him, you know, where one of the parts of a band passes away. You know, it's happened to him in Nirvana, now with the Foo Fighters, and it sucks. But when we get more details out of kind of what happened with his death and everything, we'll relay that news to you. But yeah, it's sad. It's tragic. I know, like, they're touring and they had some other works and stuff that they had. That they wanted to do, but it'll be interesting to see what if they end up doing anything about it or just not release it. So, but yeah,
I'm reading through the replies, and you're seeing people from, like, Nickelback to Nile Rodgers to Liam Gallagher to Gene Simmons to
everybody, man. Stevie Nicks, you have Lars Ulrich, there's so many people.
Weezer, just, Phineas, The Who, like, it's. I will say we, unfortunately, have covered a lot of celebrity or, like, musician deaths on Audio Face, especially in the 5 years we've done it. We started the podcast when Chris Cornell passed from Linkin Park.
Shit. Yeah.
And yeah, that was we've done a lot of these, is what I'm saying. But the outpouring of love and support for Taylor Hawkins is something that I haven't seen as ferociously with other artists. And, like, he's like, you think of it, not to belittle, of course, in any sort of way, but, like, he was a drummer in a band and a rock band at a time when rock isn't necessarily in the forefront. So I think that just goes to speak to his character and the impact he made with musicians. Yeah. So
exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Rest in peace to Taylor Hawkins. Thoughts with the family and Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters, etc. Gotta be a rough one.
Right, moving on. First album review of the day, we have Melt My Eyes, See Your Future by Denzel Curry. It is 14 songs, 45 minutes long. Denzel Curry is a very interesting character.
Eclectic, to say the least.
Extremely eclectic. You had, you know, the little project Unlocked with Denzel Curry and Kenny Beats, which was out the EP a few years ago, I think 2020 maybe.
Yeah, we reviewed Zoo in 2019.
I know we reviewed Zoo, in 2019, and Tattoo or Taboo, depending on how you want to say it, in 2018 as well. Very, very eclectic. I remember not liking Zoo that much. I still don't. So it was very interesting to hear how... My I See Your Future would sound like, and I'm very pleasantly surprised. We were having a conversation yesterday about it, and I was like, I really enjoyed this record, and still do. I listened to it a couple of times now, and I'm pretty impressed with it, actually. For someone who has, and I'm very impressed with Denzel Curry as an artist as well, because he is extremely eclectic. No album sounds the same. Any of his records, they are all totally different, from Taboo to Zoo to the to Melt My Ice, your future, they're all different. And it's cool to hear that. But the thing, too, is with this one, it sounds like he's maturing his sound. He's maturing, like, his lyricism, the production quality of everything. And it's just everything flows very, very well within this record. There's a lot of old school influences, a lot of new school influences with this. And, yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed with it.
Yeah, I was generally impressed. I think it's an album that plays through the best of any of Denzel Curry's projects to date.
100%.
It doesn't play through as well of an album as I would want it to. But however, like Sean was saying, I refuse to, in many aspects of my life, I refuse to adjust my standards. That being said, we have to be real and look at a lot of rappers don't even meet this bare minimum standard of growing your sound, making your project sound different between a part of each other, being like thoughtful and methodical of going, I'm not just going to put out stuff every 3 or 4 months. Let's do the test really quick. Why be better? Because this is what happens when you're not constantly pumping out like 12 or 13 tracks every month or so, trying to assert that you can make songs. Like, cool, it's really easy to like go down to a jam session, make 13 okay songs, and walk out of that and release it. You can do that if you want to. It's just not good. You work a little bit on your sound, you try to grow as a musician and add some more things to your tool belt, and you get something a lot better. Also helps that, you know, like a lot of rap is feature heavy, and rap has done a really good job of branching out into other genres in a way that I think is probably, rap is probably the genre where like secretly a bunch of things are now collaborating. Like it's really easy to see rap collaborating with different artists now, but here you have your obligatory T-Pain, which is glad to see still around, the Slow Tie reference at the end. And Slow Tie has been very fun hanging around with like rappers as well, but I think both of their, Denzel Curry's really like raspy, loud kind of like rap style, and Slow Tie is like very punk influenced and focused spoken word rap style, really go really well together.
Agreed.
We are gonna have to spend a little bit of time on track 8 because that's amazing. But let me just say,
I want to get to that, but we'll hold on to that because put a pin in that.
Yeah, let me just say, Josiah and Powers Pleasant, Jid, Rico Nasty, and Black with a 6, along with Denzel Curry.
Clickety Slack himself with Denzel Curry. Oh my god,
it's a track and a half, but more on that later. Basically, you have Denzel Curry. We'll go through this, and we might as well start right now with like Melt Session number 1 and walk in with Robert Glasper. Shout out Robert Glasper. Have not seen him around in a minute, but there are two, the bigger point I was saying, Denzel Curry did a really thoughtful choosing and picking of people to feature with on this album. And what you get is a record that even though you're pulling from so many different artists, sometimes on even the same song, the songs sound cohesive enough to work together in an album, even though I may not like how they play through in order.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, maybe only in the middle of the album do I have issues with the way the album is structured, but I like it throughout it. I like the beginning of it, how like Melt Session number 1, walk in, worst comes to worst, John Wayne, also known as Santana. The world is darker than the integration of a Brooklyn Dodger. All I need is me, myself, and I, and also my revolver. Crackers out here shooting joggers, trouble making fire starters. Still get paid to solve our problems, him or me. I guess I pop him way before he shoot. I shot him plotting from the get and got him. 911 emergency will murder me the day I call him. Now they got me living lawless, being the furthest thing from flawless. They ain't fuck with niggas since the like they,
is this me?
Who said that? anyways, with those 4 tracks, it kind of gets you into this theme that he wants to get you into. You know, it's a little bit chiller, a little bit stepped back for him for sure, because normally he's like really into your face, you know, spitting vocals, just fast, various, crazy. But this is step back, it's stripped back a little bit, and the beats are really good. They're calm, they're chill. Bass lines are incredible. But the main thing for me is Denzel Curry's flow is getting better. It sounds very, very good in every track he does. All the features in here really compliment him well. And that was an issue I had with him before, like on Zoo. I didn't like the features. I didn't like how he sounded with other people. Sometimes I thought that he would overpower them or get overshadowed. Like, there was no happy medium with that. And this record, to me, is where you finally really found his place of, okay, hey, I can have these banger tracks, like Ain't No Way, and even Sendero, and a couple others towards the end, but more on that later. But even with those ones, compared to even like the front half of the album where it's a little bit slower, it's still good. So, yeah, kind of moving on to that middle of the record, you know, Mental Troubles featuring T-Pain. I actually really like T-Pain's feature in this. I think he complements him very well. I'm usually a big critic of T-Pain, even though T-Pain is right of last year, but even with this little auto-tune thing he still does, it worked well with it.
Got some problems that the music can't fix. Whole squad, everybody on the dick. More money, more problems, and we lit. All my exes texting saying I ain't shit. They say get the bag, go and be yourself. Pretty bitches say I need to be myself. When I was down bad and I needed help, passing by me on the street, you should have seen.
And that's, to me, a sentiment that, like, you know, Denzel Curry is doing really well with the production and trying to implement whoever artist he's working with into the record. So,
and the co-sign with T-Pain. I mean, no one exemplifies that legendary rant from last year where T-Pain's begging artists, especially in rap, to try different things. I mean, Denzel Curry would definitely be one of the first artists you would bring to mind on that, who's 100%. Doing things and executing very well. Maybe not would have been the first you bring to mind, just because, like, he's been a little bit quiet up to this point with projects, but this is a great example. I think the T-Pain co-sign at makes a lot of sense there. But since we just finished talking about track 7, let's just dig into track 8. Let's dig into track 8, baby.
Been 5 years, still ain't took a break. I done did so much and still I paid it my way. Good poker face, do that shit with great.
Ain't no way, 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 ain't no way. When bitches smiling in my face, wanna take what I make. Too bad I do this shit with grace, can't relate. Take a break and come back when it resonates.
Ain't No Way is one of my favorite tracks in a minute. Like, rap wise, production wise, everything. Like, Squiggly so Slack can do no wrong. He layers just a lovely flow or R&B type thing on whatever pairing you do. Rico Nasty with Denzel Curry, another perfect thing, just like I was saying with Slow Thigh, their unique styles and what they bring to fits rap, so that well. Edgy thing, not just fits, compliments, makes it better. Jid, one of the sleepers, absolutely, right now. Like, he's like a sleeper J. Cole, essentially, with how lyrical he is, how smart it is, and you have all the other, like, little flourishes from Powers Pleasant and Desire together just really bring a complete track. It's 4 minutes long, which you would imagine, I mean, like, with that many artists that you want to highlight, it has to be at least that long, and 4 minutes just seems long for a song these days, but it doesn't overstay its welcome. It goes really nice. You get Denzel Curry, like, name-dropping some of his favorite rappers and artists in there. There's one, like, he says his references to, like, LP and Killer Mike and, like, Run the Jewels, but not only that, he goes further to, like, Killer Mike's sort of a mantra of, like, plot, plan, strategize, organize, mobilize, that kind of thing of moving away, like, moving past just political ideology that you talk about or do about, like, how do you act about it, how do you make a difference to it? Yeah. I'll stop myself right there, but if you're into that idea, power report. But,
And I like all of the references he makes throughout the record, too, because, like, he has a lot of De La Soul references and stuff, and a bunch of all these artists who he's looked up to, and you can hear those influences in this record, as I, like, alluded to earlier, and it's impressive. It's very, very impressive.
It's another one of those moments where, like, you look at other rappers, and you turn and go, what the fuck are you doing?
Okay,
where's your
now,
thing?
But,
yeah.
Exactly.
It's you see your star on the team way at the front, best mile time in the like school district, and you're looking at everyone else on the team like struggling, holding back, and you're just like, really? Come on, can we close the gap a little bit?
It's like the Edmonton Oilers where you have the two best league scorers by far, and the rest of the team doesn't do shit, and they're like not going to make the playoffs. You're like, come on now, why do I got to do this? Exactly, yeah, and it's. You know, cements our frustration with trap and rap that we've had the past couple of years and, you know, our short attention span to it now this year. But this album's fantastic and it's really good to hear it. Moving on with After Ain't No Way of X-Wing Angels, which is good. I really like Sanjuro a lot with featuring 454. I like that because it's just like in your face with it. It's short, but it's like a fun trap song where it just gets you into it. You know, feels like older Denzel Curry, but like still, again, taking that tiny bit step back, but still has a little bit of on the nose, a little bit on the fun with it. And then after that, you have, I have no idea how to say it, but track 13 with Slowthai.
Zatoichi.
Zatoichi, I can never say it. But anyways, and I really like that. I love their pairing together. Again, all of the features on here are fantastic. So, it's a good record.
YB not better.
YB definitely not better. Like, not even the same fucking planet.
If I had to complain a little bit, there's the mainstream appeal of this. I'm not sure necessarily if it's there. It's good. I mean, it's great, but I don't know
maybe
if it's less of
a track or two. Like, Ain't No Way, I think you'd have some mainstream appeal.
Walkin's blown up pretty well.
Oh, yeah. And I say maybe Troubles, but it's kind of hard.
Yeah. I don't know, but I think this is Audioface. We don't judge albums based on, how well is this going to like perform charts-wise. It's like, how is it good quality, yes or no? And a lot of times we review things that are like really highly co-signed, more on that later, that may chart well and do really well, but like it's just not great quality. So we sort of like go on to the next one. But moving on, we're going to give this a score, an arbitrary scale, because we do arbitrary scales every week on Audioface, because our review is our review, and I'm going to make one up at the top of my head, because we forgot to make one.
I'm like, did we make an arbitrary scale? Okay.
You know what? I got one. This is going to be types of birds. I mean, government surveillance devices, because we all know birds aren't real.
Birds aren't real.
So, I'm going to give this a crow. Like, one of those, like, a really strong, like hefty crow that can caw really loudly and flies long distances, does courier missions. You know, this is a reliable bird surveillance.
This is a pelican. It's a pelican. Just like swooping up in Malibu, eating some fish. Oh, reliable.
Big New Orleans birds. Pelicans.
New Orleans Pelicans. God, I forgot about that.
I'm still not going to get over the Seattle Kraken. Like, what?
Yeah.
So many different things they could have named it.
Yeah.
That would have been better,
it's
but
brutal.
Whatever. Those anchored jerseys go hard, though.
Yeah.
Anyways, you can help grow Audioface by following Audioface Pod on Twitter or Instagram. Make sure you're subscribed at youtube.com/audioface. On the latest episode of Power Report, I have a little bit of fun going into, it's a twofer. I'm doing a little bit of Dave Rubin fun. I'm going into one of my old coworkers and how he shot himself in the foot by becoming a gay Republican at the time when the Republican Party is turning against the LGBTQ community writ large. He lives in Florida and he had to explain, listen, the Don't Say Gay bill is, I'm a gay man, and actually the Don't Say Gay bill is a good thing. All I'm saying, it's so bad. And because of all the stuff that's happening, there's student debt stuff I'm talking about in the episode too, but all the anti-trans bills that are going through, passing state by state, there's a direct relation to that and Joe Rogan. And so, given that, that's another opportunity for me to go into Kyle Kalinske, so check that out on Power Report. YouTube.com/DanFromTheInternet or PowerReport.world for all of those links. We go back into music news, Sean.
This is a very interesting one. Apparently, Olivia Rodrigo's ex was hospitalized with heart failure after she released Driver's License. So I read up on this a little bit ago, and it was interesting. But Joshua Bassett, who was on the set of High School Musical, the series where they met, basically, long story short, when she released Driver's License, which is kind of a breakup song thing and everything about them, but not officially about them, you know, it's one of those on-the-nose things. People speculated it was about him, this and that, and kind of piled on him for like a week about the song, like, and stuff. Yeah,
I'm going to try not to do like a heady We Live in a Society commentary about this, but...
Of course.
For as long as pop has existed, breakup songs have been written, and those breakup songs are based in some era of reality. And there's always been a complete tabloid industry built around figuring out what the pop artist of the day is really talking about in between his or her lyrics all the time. And so that isn't anything new. What's new is the fact that back when we were limited to gossip columns on magazines on the check stand, the people who would read those magazines could not have like a direct line to the person they're talking to about.
The subject of the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then in 2007, a guy named Jack Dorsey really wanted to send all of his friends a message about his food, and we've been living in hell ever since. And so, yeah, Twitter now exists, social media now exists, and it's very easy for anyone to see opinions about anything. We can all see other people's opinions about a celebrity. I can see opinions about myself when I make certain videos. That's a fun ride. But when you are the subject of, like, to say it was a massively popular pop song was an understatement.
It's an understatement, yeah.
It is, and I don't like to do, you know, superlative, like, overstatements unless I really mean it. It was the biggest song in the world, like, full stop,
like 100%.
For months.
Yeah.
So that level of vitriol and hatred of people taking it upon their own right because stans are fucking nuts and stan culture is completely unhealthy and toxic on the internet, you take all those people who then take it upon themselves to defend Olivia Rodrigo in a breakup and threaten this kid's life. Like, listen, I like making Disney stars uncomfortable like 6 times before I wake up in bed in the morning, but yeah. there's no need to tell like a 19-year-old or whatever that he should video game himself because of a like breakup situation with a pop star. Like, I think, yeah, sure, you can say all these things and unhinge and you feel like you're anonymous, so it feels like it's less of an issue, but we're accidentally burying the lead here. All of this stuff that was happening with Joshua Bassett was so intense that he ended up going to the hospital and basically nearly had heart failure.
Yeah, he had septic shock because of all of the stress and everything of the entire world being like, you're a little bitch, basically. Yeah.
The doctors were like, if you had,
it's crazy.
The doctors were like, if you hadn't checked in within 12 hours, you would have died in your apartment.
Fuck.
To make matters worse, Bassett was trying to launch his own solo career and had long prepared to drop a song scheduled a week after when Driver's License dropped.
And it was called Lie, Lie, Lie.
And so when the song dropped, yeah, when the song dropped, everyone was like, the entire bar turns their head towards you, raises their fists, because they thought it was a diss track. They thought it was a response because it was just the worst timing ever. And so,
all this coincidence.
This all goes to say that, and I see this in other aspects of the internet too, especially like in certain subcultures of Twitter, like you have like LGBTQ Twitter and like Black Twitter and all those other things. These subcultures will eat each other alive off of like mm-hmm. very minor different things. And what you don't see is that like these have real consequences for people's mental health and their sanity. And it can't just be taken for granted that like you say these things out on the internet and you feel like it's fun because you can get some meaningless internet points, i.e. Likes, retweets, shares, followers, whatever. But to what point? I say wild shit, sometimes really hurtful shit, but I'm usually doing it to powerful people to make a point, politically speaking, and that's like using the tools of the game to subvert a message into what I hopefully think is good. But if you're just a fan and you're telling another like artist to like off themselves because of a song that was made, you are lost in the sauce.
It's just crazy.
I mean,
insane.
We start the podcast by saying like hello humans. It's a nod to the fact that we music listeners are human people, we're regular people. We should try to look at the humanity in people before we send them death threats. And if you're gonna do that, at least send them to Tory Lanez.
I would say you got Chris Brown, Tory Lanez, like
there's a wide variety of options here.
You've got a wide variety you could go with, like
yeah.
At least pick a beater, goddammit.
Yeah. Audioface does not condone bullying or violence of any form. Don't copyright strike us, YouTube. Anyways.
Yeah, please don't. We don't need any more strikes.
Not again. Wouldn't it rock?
You got striked again? Again.
Wouldn't it rock if our 2 strikes on Audioface were, oh, well, we made fun of Kid Rock, and we were bullying DaBaby and Chris Brown and Tory Lanez, and YouTube copyrights, or YouTube discipline struck us for that. That would be wild.
777 by Lotto. It is 13 songs, 32 minutes long. I'm going to call this the Boeing 777X album, just because it is a plane I actually want to fly in one day, so I just got to say that now. But anyways...
real pilot hours.
Real special VFR hours.
So
man.
Lotto's a little new to the scene in some ways, like very typical, like trap kind of like uprising kind of deal. And this album features some pretty interesting cosigns. Like if it's that one meme where it's like you have $15 to pick your features, like this is one of those. I'm gonna choose your money wisely. Yeah, I'm gonna pick very few features, and I'm gonna pick all like the main dollar hitters. You have Lil Wayne and Childish Gambino. You got Donald Glover out of rap retirement for this. All right, Bye. You got Nardo Wick, Kodak Black, 21 Savage in the beginning. You have a lot of heat coming on this album. Yeah, Kodak Black. You got Lil Durk, and the end result is mediocrity. Like, you're trying very hard on here. There's a really flourishing time for female trap artists and female artists in general, I think. And what this was, you know, three steps above and better than City Girls, but like not touching Megan Thee Stallion or Cardi B even. So
yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's 3.6 Ronkin. It's not great, not horrifying. You know, it's, It does the job of giving you pleasant trap, as I'm going to call it now. That is my new category of audio fish trap, where it's like, it gets the job done. You can throw it out in a party. No one's going to yell at you. No one's going to throw shade. You're just going to on, but you don't have to think about it.
Pleasant, pure, clean, wholesome trap music.
Yeah, exactly. But no, this isn't clean, pure, wholesome trap, because clean, pure, wholesome trap means it's like a step above this, at least one step above this. This is just
crowd pleaser trap.
Crowd pleaser trap, exactly. So,
yeah.
But going into it, you have, you know, you have Boeing 777 Part 1 and Boeing 777 Part 2. They're okay as openers. It kind of gets you into the album idea, and you're like, all right.
You've heard a rap album before. The artist is going to talk about how they're the best, and, like, you can't even call them anything but the best, and, of course. I'll say, like, every rapper kind of picks, like, what their lane's going to be. Like, Pooh Shiesty's got the trapping and dealing kind of thing. Future's got the how to treat women less respectful in 3 Easy Steps booklet, kind of, like, working through his stuff. Like, you have different varieties of this. A lot of the female artists kind of go for, like, my sexuality is liberation and power with people. And, like, I think there are artists like Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B who do that and other things. And then you get artists like City Girls who like do that. And that's sort of like, okay, played out and that's it. Like, okay, we get it. You're hot. And you like rock around as such. Like there's, and, and so this, yes, you're talking about your BBL, but what about your feelings? Dead at the strip club.
But hey,
that,
man,
I that's not speaking from experience. I just love the idea of like me trying like one of those like therapy situations where you're like, no, so like why are you what's going on here kind of things. Anyways, yeah, so like you get Wheelie with 21 Savage, and that's kind of that deal. This is one of those phoned in 21 features.
It's not
like
a great
whatever
features, so it's kind of disappointing in that, but honestly, like the lyrics of the track and everything, I was like, it's
whatever. Bad bitches, I got several.
21.
She eat the dick like it's edible.
Oh God.
Slop on my knob. Fuck that. Lick on me, bitch, like an animal.
Straight up.
I want to talk when I get done slime. Arts on the rap, but they ass keep dying. She don't want to fuck, I ain't finna keep trying. Saying it's time.
Yeah, I was looking for like a, oh, this like, I was looking for something to justify the fact that you brought Donald Glover out of like the out of the director's seat in another recording booth to do a track. And I'm like, this is.
She said my Gucci don't go with it. Try and be happy, get money to model. My girl hit the lotto, my sons are mulatto. My sons are all healthy, and shit you can tell me. I'm hotter than Nelly, they say that I'm smelly. It never smell wealthy, I think. Yaga mask drip like a sink. Skated, you not in the ring.
Pray for my enemies, but I need clarity. They ain't got empathy for me, they stab me. They use my couch when they needed a
it's therapy. It's Sunshine with Lil Wayne, Childish Gambino. I was really expecting a lot more. Lil Wayne sounded really bad, like really, really bad. And then Childish Gambino was just present, but not spitting anything. It's the whole project, and this is like accumulation of the whole project. It was just very disappointing. It just was flat. It wasn't anything great, and you had so many features in here that could, you know, lift you up. You had so much potential for it, and it's just, it's okay.
Yeah, there's a chance
that's all it is.
there's a chance for her to make her own lane and, you know, not sound like every other trap project that comes out. And she decided, no, I'm going to sound like most of the other trap projects that come out. And it's, this is on our YB scale, YB better, YB worse. I go, YB not better, but just barely, in the sense that,
just like, yeah,
I think YB has a lot more range lyrically and like verse wise, but
Range I'd, Brothers.
Yeah, it's not,
yeah, not the Wayans.
It has a lot more range in that context, but it lacks depth in where you could possibly, like, again, you have Kodak Black here, you have Lil Durk here, but these sound like,
Kodak Black isn't in the Florida Panthers stadium.
These, all of these tracks sound like throwaway songs on these artists' respective projects. And a throwaway song in trap basically just shouldn't have been made. It was like a, yeah, we were fucking around in the studio and made this Fisher Price beat and decided to throw it on the track. tried to throw it on the mix so we just had a, so the label would be happy we get more streams. Like, it's like a purely mathematical decision. But, breaks. Overall,
thank you.
This is a very lackluster project. I wish that for all of the hype that a lot of these things get, it lived up to it and didn't just make me go, is this like an industry plant? Like, why is this like so much hype around this? Why are we getting like these kind of features for something that everyone feels profoundly bored on the project? And
yeah,
if it comes through for like us as reviewers, sucks. Sorry. Arbitrary scale this week. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because our review is our review. If we gave it a number or a ranking, that would just make the comment section more annoying. So this week it's going to be Types of Birds. This is going to be one of those peacocks. It's like a peacock? Lot of like showing off and things, but it's not very useful as a surveillance bird. Like it's hard. Like it's very noticeable. You know where it is. It's hard to get it in places. It doesn't even fly that well. Peacocks like all look, no show.
I could see that. This is a seagull. Mm. This is a solid certified seagull.
I don't like seagulls.
Certified seagulls.
Certified lover seagull.
Also, I was going to say, oh yeah, we are not the Rubens.
We have no ideas. Okay. Let's move on to the how many times do I have to teach you this lesson, old man corner. So Spotify, friends of the show. Hi, Daniel Eck. Thanks for those COVID-19 warnings on our podcast, even though we're not spreading COVID-19 misinformation, because if we were spreading COVID-19 misinformation on your platform, we'd have $100 million right now. $200 million right now.
$200.
So, right. So yeah, last year, Spotify, in the midst of a torrent of justified criticism that they don't compensate artists fairly, released a page called Loud and Clear that was a PR ploy. Yeah, cherry picking and spinning the numbers in this best way of possible to make you think that, oh, being an artist on Spotify isn't that bad. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And everyone hated it. It only gave more fuel to the fire for everyone who was criticizing Spotify for their actions in this. But one of the biggest numbers highlighted in the report was the $7 billion it paid in royalties to rights holders, which the company said is more than any service or single retailer in history. And considering Spotify has more than 180 million paying subscribers worldwide, that amount, $7 billion over 180 million paying subscribers, is like, listen, if you don't deal in numbers all the time, it's easy to get lost in the millions and billions and all that stuff, but that's a little, it feels not, like you could be doing,
great.
At the end of the day, like, yeah, Spotify is a lot, and maintaining a large music library is a lot, but it's not YouTube. Like, it's not streaming video to a bunch of people all the time. Like, the bandwidth required to do Spotify is not as expensive as, like, the bandwidth required to do Netflix, all right? Spotify doesn't have the Netflix problem, where Netflix has to go, we have to spend our money to make shows. And okay. shows are super expensive to make, and Hollywood's annoying, and like Netflix is doing it the like way where you spend a lot of money for it. At least they have been from time to time. Spotify doesn't have to make its own albums. They sometimes, allegedly, they're paying some artists to do it, but like they don't have to. The record labels do that for them. But yeah, they updated the report and using 2021 data, and it's very carefully worded. It's like a lawyer went over this. So one of them says that for the first time, more than 1,000 artist catalogs generated over $1 million for rights holders. So of those catalogs, 450 generated $2 million and 130 generated $5 million. And then there are 50,000 catalogs that generated at least $10,000 from Spotify. So as noted in this Consequence of Sound article by Eddie Fu, did like a great job breaking this down. He says, generated is the key word here because the great majority of artists and songwriters don't see any of that money unless it trickles down from rights holders who are labels, publishers, and distributors.
Baby. How many times have I got to tell you this, old man?
Those labels, publishers, and distributors then divide the payments according to their contract. So driving that point home, Spotify says the $4 billion it made in major labels in 2020 means more money to reinvest to grow the industry. So basically, as always happens, Spotify is saying, we are doing a good job of giving money to the record labels, to the publishers, to everyone.
But the artists.
Yeah, to everyone who is holding out their empty hand before the artists.
It's absurd.
But, and then, so I'll take a little bit of a tangent here and say, this is a little bit of Spotify's issue, but this is also a little bit of the record labels. I mean, the record labels know what they're doing. They know they can stand in the middle and do a lot of this work that artists can't do by themselves and won't do by themselves most of the time when it comes to marketing and branding and promoting. And so they do that, but they get their bag and they collect their check that whole time. So, I mean, as an artist, it's hard, especially to even like break through with no connections like that to a label. But the moment you can go independent, you just get so much more agency over what you're doing that I would just go for that immediately. And so, yeah, it's overall, Daniel Ek and people at Spotify are going to continue to say that we're doing a really good job at getting money to musicians. They're never going to say that. One thing Daniel Ek said a while ago is he wants to help 1 million artists live off of their art. No. They can barely crack a 1,000.
Yeah, what the fuck? Are you stupid?
Yes. I'm good on that, unless you have any other thoughts.
No, I mean, yeah, it's just... what do you expect? They're not going to change. It just keeps happening over and over again. So just don't fall for it, is what I'm going to say. Don't be an idiot.
Yeah, and definitely check out what people are...
don't get Tidal.
Check out what people are doing in response to that. So there's like word of newer streaming services that are coming up that are trying to be more equitable and paying artists. I don't have the name off the top of my head right now, but yeah.
Bandcamp's doing a decent job. SoundCloud does a decent job.
Yeah, there's even like newer ones that are coming on the scene right now that might grow that are getting some artist cosigns that I just can't remember for the name right now. But we can move on to the Vanilla Ice Corner. We haven't done one of these on Your Face. When we get to when we get to analyze a song that is accused of sounding like another song, and we do our own I guess audio face court here.
We do our own investigative journalism.
Yeah, we report, you decide. So, Future Nostalgia, the world tour for Dua Lipa's album, which we said, and for context, Dua Lipa's album was very good. We said that a lot of pop artists are doing this throwback to the 70s, 80s kind of thing, literally Future Nostalgia, and Dua Lipa, of all the pop artists, did it the best. Ariana Grande gave it a go, Lady Gaga gave it a go, I almost said Larry David. yeah, pop star Larry David made made an album very similar to Ariana Grande, and... Yeah, no. So you have a lot of artists making this kind of thing. Most of them aren't doing that great, but Dua Lipa's was really solid. We gave it a lot of credit, and a lot of people took notice, including people who want the bag. And they kind of justify that they, like, say the song includes some infringement. And this is a thing that's been happening a lot lately with things, like, with songs that get popular, and then artists from, like, 20, 30 years ago are like, you copied my thing. Sometimes it's a little more cut and dry than others, but Dua Lipa is a little bit unlucky because there are there's three songs, two separate lawsuits, and they got filed within about a week apart from each other. So one of the songs, I'll go in order from, like, least to most egregious. The most recent suit was filed on behalf of L. Russell Brown and Sandy Linzer, who wrote two songs, Wiggle and Giggle All Night and Don Diablo. They're by different artists, but they're both written by those two people, and they allege that the melody is a duplicate of those tracks. So I included the one that was, like, the most similar, in my opinion, of the two, Wiggle and Giggle, in, like, the podcast version.
I met this crazy guy from Texas, said his father was a Mexican, his mother was a purest Cherokee. It was a little part of her in him that made him such an Indian that he was all American to me. To me, he promised freedom for the rest of my life. He said, I love the way you wiggle, and I love the way you giggle, and I'd love to give you just a little kiss on your lips. He was such a delight, so we wiggled and we giggled all night. Hey.
And Sean and I heard it before listening to this because, okay, I'm giving away the magic of how the podcast gets edited and shit. But we both felt that, and you can, like, pop in if you want to, that Wiggle and Giggle All Night didn't seem the most related. Like, you had some intonations for, like, how the words were delivered, like, kind of quickly going through it. But beyond that, I didn't see, like, a big, you know, the chorus of Levitating is pretty recognizable in the way the notes are, even to a lay music person. And I didn't really hear much of that in the chorus of Wiggle and Giggle or any of the parts.
Not much, no.
Yeah. Same with Don Diablo. I listened to that separately and I was like, I don't even want to reference that if even Wiggle and Giggle All Night isn't making it. Then when I heard Live Your Life by Article Sound System, and that one's a little hard to paint.
Sunrise now, don't stop till you have lived your life, oh, lived your life for real. Lived your life for real.
So as we, baby Jesus,
so as we just played, yeah, so as we just played that there, that's a little tougher. So we're not speaking out of, like, a legal decision or, like, expertise in this case, but in our own opinion, for the purposes of the Audioface Awards, we're giving this the Vanilla Ice Award. I mean, a nomination.
I'm gonna levitate to giving this the Vanilla Ice nomination.
Yeah,
do it.
That's very similar, but really fast to get into the context of these things, that also, I love that reference because in the lawsuit, I do enjoy when lawyers have fun from time to time. The lawsuit was filled with puns, saying defendants have levitated away plaintiff's intellectual property. Plaintiffs bring suits so that defendants cannot wiggle out of their willful infringement.
Oh my God, beautiful.
Like, dude, come on. I'm suing you for dad jokes. But I'm reading from Fast Company here, and these copyright lawsuits of this type have been kind of common and costly for music artists, so much so that there's a form of insurance. Errors and omissions has existed all the time, but usually it's for people who do legal work. So, like, if a lawyer makes a mistake, they're insured against that mistake. They can be sued, like, they'll be fine in that case, right? But now artists and musicians are starting to get errors and omissions insurance. So in the event that someone tries to sue them for copyright infringement on a song, they're insured in that case. Because these things can cost millions of dollars. They can freak musicians out. Because sometimes you have the Vanilla Ice case where we're like, hey, man. You saw Under Pressure and you're like, okay, how can I flip this? And it's like, dude, do not pass go, do not collect $200. But you have a lot of cases where, like, music, there truly is only so much you can do with the basic notes and choruses, especially in pop music.
Super pop, yeah.
The more time goes on, especially now that we've scaled out and you have so many artists doing so many different things, you're only going to get more songs sounding the same. I mean, that's our complaint on Audioface, and sometimes it's anecdotal. This is when it goes, like, really hard in the paint and gets, like, kind of serious. But I think that because of that, we are going to have to kind of look and go, okay, some of these, are they like cash grabs from artists who aren't making money mm-hmm. right now and think they can do it, as some people have the opinion of, or is it the case where, you know, it's an honest mistake. It's hard to make music. Making a pop song just sort of seems like, oh, it clicks. And maybe it clicks because that pop song or that pop melody has already been done. But it's just so hard to do that as you're making it. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to follow because we have the past 5 years to see how these cases pan out, because sometimes they work out well for the sued artist, the defendant, and sometimes they don't and they have to pay up. It's kind of all over the place with how it's judged, what is similar versus what isn't. So I really don't know.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to make making music easier for a lot of these artists, especially.
No, God, no. Yeah. Yeah, and only time will tell, so. But it's nice to get a vanilla ice. We haven't had one in a while, so.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Gotta dust off that usage.
We gotta dust off. Get that baseline on us. Anyways, moving on. The last album review of the day, we have Echoes and Cocoons by Brandon Boyd. It is 10 songs, 40 minutes long. Brandon Boyd, the frontman, lead singer of Incubus, one of my favorite rock bands, and oh, you know, band that we have reviewed many times on here. We did review the Diamond My Dryer single, which came out early this year, I would say.
Yeah, like a month or two ago.
Yeah, maybe like January or so, or early February. I don't know anymore. I don't know, man. I just work here. but it's nice to finally be able to talk about this album. So we didn't get to last week because apparently this year is like music vomit where every album is coming out right now. So, but anyways, this is an interesting record because Brandon Boyd is the epitome of an artist. Like, that's what he does. He creates visual arts. He does a lot of paintings and murals and a bunch of different stuff on lawn with his musical art and everything. So the dude is just constantly, constantly creating. Also, I forget how old he is. He's like in his mid-40s.
Yeah, which is like wild, like, young considering how like long Incubus has like
been around.
Incubus
has been playing since like since the mid-90s, I would say. I think Morning View was around that time, I like to say. But anyways.
Yeah, Brandon Boyd's 46.
Yeah, 46. He's getting them Tom York numbers.
Like, was Brandon Boyd, like, literally 14 in Incubus? Like, what the hell?
I know, apparently. But anyways, it starts off with Diamond My Dryer, which is that lead single that came out. And it's a track I really like. I don't know if I would put it as an opening track, maybe, but it is a track I really, really enjoy. It just sets off the rest of the album a little iffy. I mean, that might be my only complaint of really big complaint of the record. It's just having that as your opening track. I'd rather put maybe Pocket Knife or More Better as the track and then have Diamond My Dryer second or third or something like that. Yeah, I would rather it be that way. Just because it's such a dark song and everything with that, and the rest of the album isn't necessarily that, so it's just interesting with it. But anyways, I do thoroughly enjoy that track a lot. Second, third tracks are good, where you have Better Universe, which is kind of picks up the tempo a little bit. Then you have Pocket Knife, which is also onto that EP that was released earlier, which I do like as well.
I really liked Better Universe. That line, did you read the book or did you only see the movie or that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Like, it's, and a lot of this record called me back to, like, the golden age of alternative music to me, like, to 2000s. Yeah. I think it's styled like that, but done largely in a new way, and Better Universe is one of those tracks. So I feel like this kind of thing, other than, like, this album that we're hearing it on, I feel like it would only come out in, like, 2000s. Like, on the end credits of some, like, 2000s movie about, like, adventure and friends finding their way. And, like, it feels like one of those kind of, like, alternative rock kind of things that was just super popular at that time. And this is a good recreation of that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, with someone who's made music for this long, it's very interesting. Again, you know, we had we always talk about the sonic face, to see how someone, you know, evolves their sound after years and years and decades even. Talk about Arcade Fire earlier on this with Brandon Boyd. It's great. Yeah. Better Universe is a great representation of like what you could do with a sound that is old, but you can still make it sound new. Like you could still incorporate different things into record, and that's the epitome of this record. And it's something that is impressive with me, really, of Brandon Boyd and Incubus in general, of them when they all get together on this, that they have been able to do something, you know, like you had 8 come out, and then you had Trust Fall Side A and B, which came out a couple years ago, which is one of our favorite rock EPs ever reviewed on this podcast. And now with this, it's a really good alternative rock record. More in the middle of the record, you have 2 months a day, More Better, which I actually like More Better.
Better than you know yourself.
Ad Infinitum and those tracks in the middle I liked a lot too. It gets a little bit slow, if anything, kind of might be another critique, but towards the end you have some fantastic tracks towards the end of it.
I have to one, it's Ad Infinitum. I just like love the word infinitum, so I like had to go through that. And then the last tracks, I just kept thinking of like different alternative records I've liked in the past several years. So like New Dark Age, I kept thinking, oh, Little Dark Age. And this is totally like unrelated to the song, doesn't sound alike, but I was just doing this. And I saw Petrichor, and of course, I think of the 1975.
Yeah, exactly.
And so like these are just like me being a music head, association things here, there. They're not at all related. I don't think Brandon Boyd's purposely going, and here's going to be my MGMT reference, and here's going to be my shout out to Matty Healy. I don't think so. but it does go back to, I really like this project as a callback, like one of the silent greats doing a really solid alternative record project. Like I get the same kind of feeling from this as I did from Ed O'Brien's solo thing, EOB, that he released. Yes.
Yeah,
that entire record where like
it's fantastic.
Yeah, these are some really good on its own tracks in its own album contained, a really good representation and version of music from a certain era being redone now better with a little bit of experimentation, with a little bit of that smarter flair you get from a veteran.
Yeah, I mean, much agreed, because with, like, example, towards the end of the record, you have Petrichor, which is one of my favorite songs on the record. It's just beautiful. It's like... Boyd's voice is one of my favorite alternative rock voices ever, and he still has it. He can still hit the notes and stuff that he's been doing for 20 plus years, which is impressive to do, because it's very, very hard to be able to keep your vocals when you get into your 40s, and in your mid-40s nonetheless. And with that, he sounds just as good as he did on Morning View and stuff in the 90s and early 2000s. It's incredible. And yeah, it just, to me, it shows, you know, you can tell when someone is genuine about the art that they make and someone who is not genuine the art they make. You know, someone who just does it just to push numbers up, just to push things for the record company, whatever. And Brandon Boyd has nothing to prove. He has nothing to do, right? He's been on the top of the world for a long time. And with that, he likes to create. And with that, every song, the lyrics in these tracks are incredible. There's a lot of different hidden meanings, a lot of different, like, superlatives and stuff that are in these tracks that I really need to dig down and dig deeper into myself. It's just I don't have the time, because we got to review 48,000 fucking songs a week. But this is one of those records where, to me, it's going to keep growing and growing. And the more I listen to it, the more I'm going to appreciate it. The more of these songs I can kind of deconstruct and figure out more. Like
the more better.
Yeah, the more better. Exactly. But again, like, you know, this.
You're going to say an example, Petrichor, yeah.
Yeah, it might be 5 years from now, I might be, oh my God, I finally understand what he means by it, or something like that, which is something that you don't get that often anymore in music, and especially in this alternative rock space where you can get a couple things here or there that might last you a year or two, but this is one of those records that I really like. And yeah, it's impressive. It's very good.
Yeah, I'm super happy with it. Arbitrary Scale, because we do Arbitrary Scales every week on Audio Face, because our review is our review, and if we actually gave it some actual ranking system, you would all hate it and give a shit. So it's going to be birds. This is going to be the middle finger. That's my favorite bird. No, I'm kidding. This is going to be all the birds. I'm now running out of like the bird breeds I can do off the top of my head, and I don't want to give this some of like one of the more annoying bird breeds. So this will be the bald eagle.
Bald eagle? That's a good choice. That's
yeah. Good choice. Endangered, a little old, but majestic. And when you see one, you stop and you go, damn, I really want to blow up a country eagle. In the Middle East right now.
I want to go protect some oil fields. This is a burrowing owl. Wise owl, but it'll fuck you up if need be.
I feel like we should get an animated movie about an owl soon. We haven't gotten one of those in a while.
I would like an animated movie about an owl. I think I would enjoy that.
Owls go hard.
Owls go super hard. I've actually been around and held owls before, and they just stare at you, and you're like, are you going to kill me? And he's like, I don't know. Step.
Are you going to kill me? They just, like, tilt their head.
It was like, fuck around to find out. And I'm like, all right, respect.
That's my kind of bird. All right. Quick hits. Grimes just keeps going on with the bangers here. So I don't know how deep any of the music heads are, but like I hadn't heard this name in so long. I was like, oh, wow, that did exist. So there was a really big like indie music website in the early 2010s, a blog called Hipster Runoff. And it was like, I guess kind of like Brooklyn Vegan or like one of those like very obvious, like this is the audience we're appealing to websites, but this is our stuff. Like, but like, I definitely heard some of my first like chill wave tracks off of Hipster Runoff and all those different kind of things. So it was a big moment at that time, but apparently, God damn it, Grimes was doing an interview with Vanity Fair and she super casually was like, oh yeah, I helped coordinate a DDoS attack, the kind of attack where a computer server that hosts a website is overwhelmed with traffic, therefore taking down that website. Grimes is like, yeah, I did some of that shit. We then led to do a little bit of blackmailing here, a little bit of extorting there. And that's why there's no more Hipster Runoff. And the interviewer was just like, surprised Pikachu face. It's like, what?
That's one of those, just the producer in the background is, oh, Michael Savage. Whoa.
Yeah. So I'll go into, she gives the story by saying, okay, yeah, this was this funny one. And she always wanted to tell the story. And basically it was just a vendetta over the fact that a photo of Grimes from a party got leaked to Hipster Runoff and they posted it, which is like, okay, it's like, whatever.
And
if you can't, and like, to be fair, there's also the guy behind Carl's or whatever is he was an interesting like person. Like a lot of the writings and stuff were like out there. I'm not gonna go out there to defend it, but I will say something here and then just like leave it for interpretation. He was, in addition to being credited with the term chillwave, he was also cast a skeptical eye on the indie scene in general. Saying he often referred to it as the quote corrupt indie machine. Because the industry, especially indie especially, it's prying on a lot of, like, younger artists to, like, exploit them in a number of different ways. And
she can hold my tongue.
Yeah. It's something that people who were closely following the indie spaces were taking note of at that time, and these things that we've heard throughout the music industry since then have only kind of shown that that aspect of the criticism was definitely correct. Things have gotten better, supposedly, but, you know, they're still out there. But in 2012, after the attack, Carl's gave an interview to Vice's Motherboard Vertical and basically said that like it was the beginning of the end for the website. So after that, Carl stopped posting on Hipster Runoff, and the site got sold for about $20,000 in 2015 and just like went off the internet. And of course, like, hipster runoff, like, it wasn't the only reason. There's a rapidly changing time in the industry. People stopped using websites and started going to social media. So, like, it was rough in the streets for a lot of media websites. It's hard to say if hipster runoff would have still existed to this day. But for Grimes, just kind of go out.
In some form, maybe, like, he swapped it over to a YouTube channel or swapped it over to Twitter account or something like that. But all of that's not going to happen.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say is that Grimes is telling this story, and she goes, you can tell she's been around Elon Musk too much, because she goes, Grimes, super popular celebrity who has been popular for 10 years and continues to be popular despite continually making an idiot of herself, said, back in the day, before the woke era, I actually got canceled for this, which is so crazy. Stop right there. If you are a celebrity and you're being interviewed by a magazine about how you were canceled 10 years ago, you were not canceled. The word cancel means nothing.
Oh my god, I hate people where they're like, I'm gonna be canceled. I'm like, sure you are, bud. Until they start tarring and feathering people in the square for being Lutheran, like, we ain't even canceled.
You're not being canceled. You just have to turn off your Twitter notifications for a day. Go pound sand. Anyways, this is supposed to be quick hits, and I almost got mad in that one, so let's move on. Maybe you've heard of Wordle, the annoying green-yellow squares game that the New York Times bought because they're a bunch of animals. Well, here is Hurdle. No, they aren't those things you jump over. These are, this is a name for an app for...
Didn't you jump over?
This is an audio podcast, so I got to make sure people are understanding my spelling of this. H-E-A-R-D-L-E. So basically, it kind of works like Wordle, where you get a second of a clue to recognize a popular song. And if you get basically six tries. The first clue is 1 second. The sixth clue is 16 seconds. And you have to try to guess the song in as few clues as possible. And then I presume there's some element of it where you share it to your Twitter following or whatever to brag, hey, I got today's hurdle in only 2 tries. I'm so smart, whatever. So Hurdle launched as on February 26th with the intro song by the XX as the first runoff idea. And it's grown pretty massive in the past couple of months, but yeah, these Wordle ideas are doing really well. The Wordle creator Josh Wardle sold the idea to the New York Times for a little over $1 million. And there's a bunch of different copycats like Nerdle for math, or Loodle for bad words, or Sean, this is what we're going to be reviewing in one of the members episodes, Weasel, an app created for Weezer fans. we're not going to be talking about that, by the way. Absolutely not.
Okay, thank you. I would leave.
A lot of people have been talking about the Lollapalooza set, and I gotta say, Chicago got rooked. Like, we could definitely do better with that lineup. Lollapalooza's done you dirty. There's a whole bit of drama with one artist feeling disrespected about where they should be on the top there. But here's a guy who they're really scraping the bottom of the barrel for. Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon will be performing at Lollapalooza under his DJ name, DJ D. Sol. And he last performed at a Chainsmokers concert.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Forgot about that.
If you didn't hate this man even more. So, yeah, man, if...
Wondrous.
Yeah, I would extremely want my money back if I got tickets for Lollapalooza.
Me too.
And lastly, because we always like to end audio face and fun note... A Brazilian singer was hospitalized. Poca, by the name, because she had severe stomach pain from holding in her farts. Poca, the singer born as Viviane de Quiroz Pereira, said that the ordeal... Oh, she shared the ordeal with her 15.7 million Instagram followers in a since-deleted post.
Hey, man.
One of my favorite memes is that random one of, like, Bugs Bunny holding a gun in a suit that says,
he's
like, everybody's gangsta until, and it shows a scene that shows a screenshot of Twitter where it says, your tweets aren't loading right now. Everybody's gangster till the tweet gets deleted, is what I'm saying. But yeah, Poca in this since deleted post says that I woke up at 5:30 a.m. with severe stomach pains and ended up in the hospital. But that's it, guys. Now I'm just fine. Just an accumulation of trapped farts.
If you can't fart around him, that's not your man, girl. Like, you gotta find yourself a new man.
Yeah. Poca said she was inspired to ignore her gastrointestinal distress by a medical advice video on TikTok.
Run. Keep running. Infinity laps.
It's like, no. You're doing great, sweetie. Keep going. And she says, girls, don't be ashamed to fart in front of your guy, because what's really embarrassing is not letting your guy sleep because you're in discomfort going to the hospital with your guy and the diagnosis being trapped farts. Moral of the story, she writes, from now on, I'm letting him rip. This has been Audio Face.
I don't know how to play us out on that. But anyways, thank you for listening, Audio Face. Follow us at Audio Face Pod on all the stuff. youtube.com/AudioFacePod.
Really fast. I should have mentioned this way in the beginning, but this week we're doing a bonus episode for members. We've got three bonus albums we'll be reviewing, and the YouTube clips will make their way out eventually. We have Mainstream Sellout by Machine Gun Kelly, Who Cares by Rex Orange County, and Forever by Fife Dog. So if you are Rex Orange County from England. So if you are, if you appreciate what Audio Face does, you love us, you want to support us, go to join.syndicate23.co, and for as little as $5 a month, you can not only support Audio Face, but you can also support Power Report, Dan from the Internet, all the other stuff we are working on at Syndicate 23, and the stuff we are planning for the future. So definitely check us out on that. And if you're a member, check out the podcast feed, the members feed, because we're going to have those reviews in there very shortly. Now, Sean, play us out. We were talking about social media.
Yeah. You can follow me at SW Suarez if I trust you. And you can follow Dan, whether he trusts you or not, at Dan from the Internet, on Instagram at Dan from the Web, on Twitter. This has been Audio Face. Thank you for listening to us, and do not hold in your farts. This has been a public service announcement. Bye-bye.
We report, you decide. Cheers.